The Week's Geek, hosted by Ralph Tromsey.
All right, how's it going, y'all? Welcome back to The Week's Peak. Happy New Year's, you know? It's a new year, 2021. I know, you know, we're all hyped up to finally be here. And we made it through 2020, and we're here. You know, hopefully this year it's a good one, you know? Everyone had their ups and downs, 2020. But, you know, hey, a blessing in disguise for me. We started off this podcast, and was started off as a quarantine little project, turned into something greater. So I do appreciate all of you for the support. Make sure you go listen to our last episode of 2020, last Wednesday, because we talked about, you know, going through the year, our podcast, and how everything kind of fell into place and all that. So yeah, make sure y'all go and do that. So today, we have a great episode. See, I've been waiting to do an episode talking about the Lakers and all that for a while, but you know, none of my people around me, like, they're not Laker fans, so it's like, and they're not basketball fans either, so I can't do that, you know. But today, that things change around here, because today we have a special guest, big Laker fan, big in the Laker community. We have Shaheen joining us today. Shaheen, how is it going, sir?
Hey, Ralph. What's up, man? It's going great. Thanks for having me on, man.
Of course. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on, man. Appreciate you for wanting to come on. Let's go ahead and just get started here. I mean, you're obviously, as I mentioned, you're a pretty big figure in the Laker community, man. I mean, how did you first become a Laker fan and all that?
You know, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and my dad and my family came from Iran a little after the revolution, and my dad just really fell in love with the country, you know, the city and all that. And he was a big basketball fan even as a kid. So when he came here, he just took to the Lakers like hard. You know, like, it was the early 80s. It was the dawn of Showtime. You know, Magic, Kareem, and Worthy. I mean, excitement, the rivalry with the six. And for him, he wanted to share in America. And so I grew up like bleeding purple and gold. And, you know, some of my earliest memories are watching Magic on the fast break, you know, dishing it to Kareem and just getting, you know, like the slam, or throwing it out to Byron on the wing. And, you know, as a little kid, when you hear a name like Magic Johnson, it already sounds pretty cool. But then you just see these like no look passes and you're just like, wait, what? How did that happen? So that's really how I kind of got started with it. And Magic was my favorite Laker as a kid growing up. Kind of until, as I entered my teen years, Kobe came on the scene. And so you kind of saw somebody that that was just a few years younger than me. It's almost like watching like a big brother make it and following a lot of that through ups and downs until his retirement. Mm-hmm. And actually the start of my Lakers love with my dad also kind of continued until the end, because, you know, he passed away earlier this year, but one of the very last things he and I got to do together was watch the Lakers win the championship this year. Wow. So that was really special and poetic for me.
Wow. Yeah. That's a, you know, that's a tough for me to hear, you know, be able to have that moment, you know, this year. So you birthed into it, or born into, you know, a Laker family, I guess. You know, I'm sort of the same over here. I grew up, and, you know, we had Lakers stuff everywhere. You know, we had like bowls and plates and stuff, and then we had shirts and jerseys everywhere. Right, and yeah. You know, every time, you know, walk in the living room, you know, we have a Laker game on, you know. And, you know, me personally, you know, you brought up Kobe a little bit there, a little bit later, because that's how I really, you know, felt an interest for it, because I remember, just like a lot of other people, 2010, in that NBA Finals, you know. And I remember as a kid, because at that time I was young, I was like first grade, and I just saw Kobe, and I saw him doing, you know, these fadeaways and all this kind of stuff and leading his team. And I'm like, wow, you know, like there's really something special about that, you know? And it was for that moment, where I'm like, you know what, like there's really something impactful here. Like I need to follow this, you know? So yeah, I'm same boat with you, man. I've been a Laker fan since, you know, childhood. I'm not that old. I'm senior high school, but you know, and but yeah, so ever since then, man, Lakers just been something that I've just enjoyed, you know. But it wasn't until, for me, I really started following I'd say my junior year of high school. That's when I started watching every game. That's when I started really going more in depth, you know, and being more of a, not your, I don't know how you want to say it, not your just your average NBA fan, but actually starting to go into things and starting to read more things and go deeper into things. Yeah, man. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, the championship this year, obviously. Man, what a time it is to be a Laker fan right now. You know, 10-year drought, tough moments, you know, ups and downs here and there. But now, I mean, we won number 17. How does that feel, man?
I mean, it's fantastic. You know, obviously, just adding another championship really is special to a team and a city that is accustomed to winning. You know, that's one of the things that when I look at it and discuss with my friends or other colleagues, you know, there are certain players that, just to be honest, I can't handle the pressure of being in a city where championships and excellence is demanded. Mm. Every team says it, but you can tell there are certain places the lights aren't as bright, the media scrutiny isn't as harsh, and they don't have necessarily ownership that is as supportive and willing to make the moves necessary to stay in contention. Mm. And not to mention, of course, like I mentioned earlier about the Celtics a bit, you know, our longstanding rivalry with them, and they've been claiming they've had that one ahead of us forever, and it just feels so good to finally tie it up. But even, I mean, to me, once I had that day, once we had our championship day, the next day it was like, all right, what's on to the next? How do we go after 18? Right. How do we surpass them? Mm-hmm. What I always kind of found fun when I bicker a little bit with some of my Celtics friends. I use the word friends very carefully. But yeah, when we bicker a little bit here and there, like their only card that they play is that we have one more ahead of you. But, you know, for me, like I've seen this in my professional career, and even when you're talking in sports, it's like, well, what have you done for me lately? And the fact you have 17 is fantastic, but you've only had one since like 1986.
Right.
You've only had like four since like 1980. We've won 10 games, man. We've won five since Kobe and Shaq came, like, and now like six when you add this one with LeBron and AD. So the way I see it is like, hey, that's great, but do you really want to sit there on your laurels and say the last championship we won was like 30 years ago? Like, you know, like the Knicks are a team that can like say, hey, we won something in the 70s. Like, congratulations.
Right.
That's not impressive, especially in a city like Los Angeles where, you know, we get antsy. We get itchy. Like, sure. When people say they want to come here, some of them can't handle that pressure. Some of those stars, they don't come here because of that. I mean, there's been the rebuilding years, which you understand on some level.
Yeah.
But you look at a guy like LeBron, that when he came here two seasons ago, we had a bunch of young upstarts. I think he was looking down the line and saying, I can bring my clout, I bring my championship pedigree, and help shape this team a little bit, and eventually get to the point where we have a guy like AD and not be stuck in, like, mediocrity.
Sure, yeah. Well, what is your take on... You know, there's something that really pisses me off when, you know, people say, you know, there's an asterisk on our 17th. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I mean, to me, I always counter that. I mean, first off, I try to step back and say, if any other team won it and somebody pulled that asterisk nonsense, I'd be like, that's not fair. It's not just because I'm a Lakers fan that I would fight back on that. I'd say every team had the equal situation of the challenge in the bubble. You know, they even had like a bit of this like tournament reseeding points just to kind of give a little bit of help for such an unprecedented situation. Right. Pandemic, shutting down a season, like games getting shut down in the middle of games, you know? So to say that is ridiculous. And on top of that, that's to go back and say when the Spurs won it in 99, they should have an asterisk. You know, when the Mavs won it in like 2011, they should have an asterisk. Like, why? Because they had fewer games, because things changed here and there because of a lockout? That's nonsense. You know, an asterisk to me is a fair thing to put on any team's championship if everyone else was like excluded from a particular situation. So when you've got a team like the Astros in baseball and their situation where they were cheating and all that, like, that's an asterisk win to me. And maybe they should just have it rescinded. But I don't see that as anything that's fair. Everyone had to come back to the bubble with that major delay. And if anything, if you want to even look at it in a way that's like, give them a little bit more props from the shutdown point, or I'm sorry, from the end point of the NBA Finals to the starting of this new season, you know, there were teams that were just like sitting out, like the Warriors and all that, because of injuries, not their fault or anything, that have had like a year off. Whereas you got the Lakers and the Heat, who had to gear up in like, what, 2 months?
Right.
Two and a half months?
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, like, you should almost give them a little bit more props to saying, like, you had to grind through this bubble situation like everybody else. And then once you finally got to that point, once you finally got it, your time off was so minimal. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to get right back in it. And, you know, a team like this, an ownership like this, a city like this isn't looking at it as like, oh, thank God we won one. Let's take it easy. No, mm-hmm. for us is like, we don't take the foot off the gas. Get back in the gym. No days off. Mm-hmm. Let's get rock and rolling. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my take on the whole asterisk discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to come back to that in a second about, you know, just really keeping our head up and just keep moving forward, even though we won the championship, but we're not content with that. I want to bring that up in a bit. But staying on this topic, do you think if Miami won, that there would people still have the same views on the asterisk or not? Because I feel like there's a big thing on just because LeBron is in there. There's a lot of, you know, just circulation on LeBron and AD and everything that people aren't, you know, very positive around. I feel like that's a big reason why people are saying that, and being consistent with that. Do you think that's the case too?
I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of hating on a team that gets a lot of like shine. I mean, they've got the whole like laid back LA, you know, like nonsense around it. But I think when you've got a team with two of the most dominant players in the game, one that could be arguably considered the greatest of all time, and one that is slowly working his way into that conversation, there is going to be a little bit more hating going on. Mm. But you know, you kind of see that in a lot of spots. It's not just LA. You know, you see that in places like Brooklyn right now, where that got KD and Kyrie. I mean, they both may be coming off, you know, different injuries and such, but they're still getting a lot of, you know, hate and scrutiny and whatnot. You saw that a bit with the Warriors, like after winning, like, you know, you win one, hey, great. And then you keep winning and you're, you know, making good moves. People get jealous when they're not in that situation. And I understand. Mm-hmm. I've had the same thing. You know, I hated on LeBron quite a lot. You go back into my social stuff, you'll see, like, I was pissed and hate that guy because he was demolishing our teams at times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he was winning championships at the expense of, you know, Kobe and you know, the rest of our team.
Right.
And I had the same going on with Michael Jordan and the Bulls. Like, not everybody in the 90s, you know, people get through those other class down. Absolutely. He was amazing. The teams were dominant and crazy. But if you think for a second, the media was always saying how wonderful this is. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You ask any fan of any other team and they would just be like tearing their hair out of how good the Bulls were at the time. Right. So I think that narrative is a little misguided at times, mm-hmm. because people are jealous when their team, which represents them, their pride, their passion, is not in a position of success. Mm-hmm. And with the Heat, you know, like, you got to give the Heat an incredible amount of credit. You know, they have a very demanding organization as well. They're run by Pat Riley, mm-hmm. you know, took the Lakers to four championships in the 80s. Did great work in the 90s with the Knicks and then the Heat. He's been in Miami ever since. He is a guy that has that same sense of, we're not going to sit still. Mm-hmm. It may take a little bit longer at times, but we're going to bring the pieces. Whether it was with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch with that Heatles era in the early 2010s, to now with, you know, a more of a like gritty, grinding, underdog mentality, Jimmy Butler-led team. So, mm-hmm. you know, why aren't they getting more hate? I think it's because you don't have the same, you know, glitz and glamour associated with them at this time that Los Angeles does. Mm-hmm. And that you've got Jimmy Butler, who's, you know, definitely a top 10 star, I don't know about top five, maybe ish, whatever, with a bunch of like really solid role players around him. But, you know, no other team's fans are going to be like, oh man, you guys have Tyler Hero. Oh man, you have Bam Adebayo. Oh my God, you have Goran Dragic, who's somewhat on his way out. So the idea of having a team collect stars in the age of increasing parity is something that I think just invites hate. And your team can either take that hate and, you know, crumble. You can either crumble under the pressure of it, and it leads to infighting and blame games and all that, as we've seen in Houston with James Harden and, mm-hmm. you know, Dwight and CP3 and then Westbrook. Or it could be a team that with the right chemistry and the right culture embraces it and says, hey, everyone doubts us. Everyone is coming for us. You know, we got to win this chip. We got to defend this crown. And I think that's what's played into the shirts that a lot of the players have been wearing and in pictures the team has been sharing. They've got pictures of like one one title that's like filled in and another like, you know, trophy that's not. And underneath it says defend, because mm-hmm. that's what we are bringing to the table. not content to just sit there and let the hate bring us down.
Right, right. No, definitely interesting. You know, obviously, you know, nothing right now is, nobody's content in terms of Laker fans with the championship. You know, we want 18, as you mentioned many times today already. And I genuinely think, you know, we have a nice, I mean, Rob Pelinka. What a man, I love me some Rob Pelinka, you know, like this season. I was not expecting, you know, the types of moves that were made this season, right? This off season. I genuinely think we have a shot that repeat. You know, later on we're gonna go over that the annual GM survey, and you know, in that survey, I mean, we're the favorites here, you know, to get that repeat. I mean, what were your thoughts on that? Because obviously it's very realistic, you know, and what do you think are the obstacles to get that might, you know, block us from getting to that spot?
I think that there's definitely a perception around the league that we might be getting a little complacent. You know, we won that 17th and that's good enough. And, you know, I love that. I love teams that would underestimate us. But with that said, it doesn't mean that other teams are just kind of sitting there. Definitely the Heat have not, you know, taken that loss lightly, and they haven't made too many, like, you know, groundbreaking trades or moves just quite yet. But, you know, I wouldn't count a guy like Pat Riley out. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's very much in tune with, like, a hungry Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. And I see little things coming there, but the Heat to me are still very much in contention.
For sure.
Boston lost Hayward, but, you know, a team that's led by Kemba Walker, you got Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum, who's really just grown into his shoes, you know, metaphorically and physically, quite well, and really establishing himself in a way where he worked with a guy like Kobe, and he's really trying to learn, improve his game. So I think Boston is another team that we got to kind of watch out for. And if we got to play them in the finals and beat them, I mean, forget this 17th championship, the 18th would be even better.
Yeah.
I think Milwaukee is obviously another team that's always in the conversation, because when you have, you know, reigning MVP Giannis on your team, like, you can't just shut that down or ignore it. They made that trade for Jrue Holiday, which was, you know, definitely an upgrade from Bledsoe. But I feel Giannis to that Supermax, they're still a few steps away from really, you know, really scaring the Lakers, you know, out here. So I'm still wary of them, and you know what Giannis can do, but really being able to look at the rest of his role players, I'm not too sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so high on the Brooklyn Nets. You know, they obviously, you got KD, you got Kyrie there, and people are like, oh, well, on talent alone, they can get there. But the way we've seen in the past, talent alone doesn't always do it. And to me, the best example of that is a very painful memory. You know, 2004, Lakers Pistons finals. You know, like, you had prime Kobe, you know, Shaq sliding to fade, but still super prime. Karl Malone, that everybody's like, oh, he was 40 and old. I'm like, you forget, he really was delivering. He was a crazy good third option, was punishing guys inside until he got that knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
And even Gary Payton, who didn't really quite fit in the triangle, but you could not ignore the talent he brought to the table. But there was so much contentiousness going on there, and not enough really coming out of the rest of the role players, that we crumbled to a team-oriented team like the Pistons. So going back to what I was saying, when you look at a team like Brooklyn, you got KD, you got Kyrie, great talents there. They've got a bunch of other solid players on the rise around them. But to me, my biggest concern about what they will do, not as a threat to me, but for themselves, is you got the injury history now going. A guy like KD coming off an Achilles, who's looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy like Kyrie, who has a history of knee problems. But more importantly, their personality clashes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They've both proven they have very thin skin, you know, in terms of how they respond to the media and even past teammates. So you take two guys with sizable egos, as most NBA players have, thin skin, and a bit of this alpha dog demand from themselves, and now you put them together. I mean, either they really put their stuff aside and they become terrifying, or it's going to just implode.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be interesting to watch. And then you've got, like, the Sixers that, at this point, I'm not convinced that the Simmons and Embiid tandem is going to work anymore. You know, like, they're both great players, but I think a little change of scenery could be required. And I know the Sixers have been, you know, mentioned when you're talking about a Harden trade potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be good, Simmons and picks for Harden or something. And then the Raptors, you can't really count them out. I mean, they're kind of going a little under the radar since Kawhi left, but, you know, OG Anunoby and, you know, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, like, they're still a solid core. It's like they almost need another Kawhi to really kind of put them right back in the limelight.
Right.
So that's what I see out of the East. And in the West, you know, the West is always really tough, but you got the Clippers. Obviously, Kawhi and PG fell short last year. There's a lot of chemistry issues going on in that room, that locker room. I don't know if Doc Rivers going out, replacing it with Ty Lue, is going to solve things. You know, I really don't know where they stand with things. A lot of their moves didn't seem particularly impressive. You know, we re-signed Marcus, we re-signed Markieff Morris for a couple $1 million, and they re-signed his twin brother for some like asinine deal. You know, if anything, I feel like these two guys are conspiring. Be like, hey, bro, you get the big contract and we'll like torpedo the team's like cap space over there. Don't worry about it. But, you know, you still got to keep your eye. You can't like let a sleeping dog lie. You never know how PG and Kawhi may have like, you know, patched up stuff on the offseason, made some new moves, whatever. You know, you got the Jazz and the Nuggets who are really competitive in the playoffs this past season. And they're still on my radar. You know, Nikola Jokic, the best thing that happened to him was the season shutdown. Because he went from being a talented guy whose, you know, conditioning was okay to showing up like in much better shape and being able to really give us problems inside. Like, you know, we needed guys like Dwight and JaVale to kind of like push around with him so AD could operate. Now, they're not on our team, but, you know, AD is working on his strength and conditioning. He's trying to push back. We're trying to bring in other guys like Marc Gasol to really take the brunt of that. Even Trez pushing around a bit. And then Jamal Murray, who's just a scoring machine. And then you got the Jazz with, you know, Gobert that got this ridiculous contract, which makes no sense. You know, but they might be there. And then for me, the last thing is, I say last because I really mean it at this point, the Rockets. I don't know where they're going. I mean, you got the Mavs with Luka and KP, but like I don't think that Porzingis is really in that same point ever since he's had his injuries. And Luka either needs a ton of help or just wants to get the hell out of there. I'm not sure. But yeah, the Rockets are going to be an interesting story because of where we are with the whole Harden drama. You know, the team and him are not anymore. John Wall's kind of, you know, what was it, Achilles or ACL tear or something? Like,
yeah.
They could still do something on Harden's back, but I just don't think they're going to push us to 7 games in any series.
Yeah, I know. I definitely agree. I mean, the thing for me too is, you know, I'm always a firm believer in, you know, anything. You know, you can't, like you said, I mean, you can't count anybody out. You know, anything can happen. You know, there's things that come up and that, you know, completely change the course of things, you know. In terms of the Lakers and our squad, right, you know, I mentioned, you know, our free agency signings and all that. You know, we took Trez from the Clippers. We got, you know, Schroeder and all these other guys, Marc Gasol. And, you know, we re-signed, you know, veteran, you know, locker presences like, you know, Dudley. I feel like the way we handled our free agency was, you know, an A-plus offseason. I mean, do you think the way that we conducted ourselves and obviously we let go of guys like Rondo, guys like, you know, JaVale, all the Dwight. But do you think, you know, we're at the same shot, or if not, you know, a better position to get back at that title shot?
I kind of look at it as like we took, you know, one step back and two steps forward. You know, losing a guy like Rondo definitely hurt because of what we saw from him in the playoffs, and then all season long in terms of the basketball IQ, the experience he brings to the team. I mean, his reputation speaks for itself with the impact, the positive impact he's made on, especially the young guys around him, helping them improve their game. But it still hurt. And you know what? I appreciate everything he did and wish him the best with the better contract that we knew he was going to get elsewhere.
Sure.
And he did. You know, I think losing JaVale and Dwight was a little more acceptable in that regard. You know, I saw it as Dwight really was a great redemption story. Oh, and yeah. Good for him. Like, when he went out, yeah, like, that last tour with the Lakers in 2012-2013 season was an utter disaster. The season we all wish we could forget. You know, that Sports Illustrated, this is going to be fun cover with him and Nash is, you know, it's one of my darkest memories. You know, it's just horrible. But to see him come back, know his role, be incredibly conditioned, and just pound the inside as we needed him was great. But once we saw what we were changing up a little bit in the playoffs, you know, that Swiss Army knife mentality saying, how do we adjust to the teams we play against? We didn't need him as much. And to a degree with JaVale. JaVale's energy was just contagious. Great guy. You could see it in like the videos these guys all posted. Everyone loved him. But we needed a little more. And especially when you could see what potentially could be on the market, like he understood the business, we understood the business, and you know, we're losing a role player is a little bit more okay if you replace him with better. To me, the last person that we lost that, you know, I hate saying I'm not too mad about is Danny Green. You know, I was really high on us bringing in Danny Green before last season because of the 3-and-D reputation he had built for himself in Toronto, in San Antonio. And even beyond that, you know, I think something NBA players don't talk about, or sorry, NBA fans don't talk about too much, is the element of experience working with other stars. You know, sometimes you sign certain players to say, hey, you know, what are Kawhi's habits? You know, you played with him, you went for that championship, what does he change up, what's this and that? And I think that was one reason we bought him in, but there was an expectation of hitting the three and playing lockdown D. And unfortunately, during the season, he didn't do a lot of that. There were especially a lot of those moments that we were looking to him to really bring us, you know, back within, you know, a few points. And he just was, you know, just whiffing on threes, clanging them, missing them, whatever it was. And especially once we went into the playoffs, I don't know what got to him, but it was just really the pressure. Something got to him. He was not the same self. So for him to leave as part of a trade, I was like, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And especially what we got back in return, you know, getting Dennis Schroeder was something that, I'll be honest, I wasn't looking at what sort of guard help could we bring in and think of his name. But when I heard that happen, I was like, really? Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. You know, young, energetic, scoring guard, knows how to dish, learned under Chris Paul last season in Oklahoma City. Like, I mean, like, you can't really ask for any better than that. And to see LeBron and other guys excited is fantastic.
Yeah.
Another step I think we took forward was really shoring up the inside a little bit more with Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol. Bringing in Trez, you know, like taking away, getting him away from the Clippers, and especially hearing from him, is like that he feels really brings that holder mentality, you know, that energy, the fact that this guy was Sixth Man of the Year and Schroeder was runner up to that really says their value around the league.
Yeah.
You know, we got two essentially Sixth Man of the Years on our team. And we don't know for which one we may or may not start. Like, I don't care what anyone says, whether they're in your starting or your bench mob, like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And Trez is a little undersized for sure. You know, 6'9", like, I don't know if he plays center, you know, or power forward or kind of something interchangeable, but a guy like that can bang inside and let AD operate outside a little more. He's a rebound snatcher. You know, he's aggressive. He's got the energy. He plays fast and runs hard. And that's the type of thing you could see from, like, a Draymond. Or even like a Charles Barkley type. I'm not saying he's in those levels, but just the you know, personality he's got and the skills he brings to the table. Gasol, I remember there was definitely a lot going on. People talking about, you know, you've got Serge Ibaka available and you've got Marc Gasol. Both bigs, both can hit the three. You know, you got Ibaka a little bit younger and, you know, doing better a little stats-wise and all that. But from a ROI perspective, what we signed Marc Gasol for what the Clippers signed Serge Ibaka for, like, we just got the better deal.
True.
And you get the passing, you get the whole Pau Gasol connection. Now we're all kind of like, re-sign Pau for one more game. And I'm a big fan of that. but I think these are all positive steps in really kind of, you know, moving forward, staying competitive, and not just constantly running it back with the same team. As much as we all love consistency, if the league is changing, you're going to be in a much better position to change and continue to evolve around your primary talent. That's something I think was a little different between the Mitch Kupchak era of, you know, being a GM for the Lakers than the Rob Pelinka era. You know, Mitch was a little bit more about that consistency, small tweaks.
True.
And, you know, no disrespect to him. I mean, helped us do a fantastic job learning from Jerry West. But Rob is an agent. He's been an agent. He is not content to just let his clients sit there and just, here's your thing, don't worry about it. So I think that wheeling and dealing, looking ahead, learning and evolving has really become part of the Lakers DNA, and we've seen it in the changes they made in the offseason.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Very content. I'm excited, man, to get this thing rolling. Actually tonight, for y'all listening, I know y'all probably gone through 6 games already in the season. We're filming this a little bit before Christmas. You know, tonight's ring night, man. I mean, all of the success, all of the, you know, just everything that's happened over the last, you know, decade, just it's all come down to right now, you know. And then right now is the first next step, and you know, we keep our heads up, you know, I think we're ready. I mean, you look at our guys too. I mean, chemistry is already, you know, over the top, man. I mean, you look at, you know, what these guys doing after practice, look at these videos on social media and all of that. I mean, I can't be any more happier. I mean, in terms of, you know, chemistry wise, I mean, what are your thoughts on all that?
I mean, I think chemistry is at the core of everything. Yeah. And, you know, that starts from the leadership of a team. What I see is 3 points. For every sort of team, you've got the ownership, you've got the coaching, and then you've got the star players. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think any fan has ever doubted the ownership's commitment to winning, supporting their players, using the term family as much, you know, ever with the Lakers. You know, you've got Dr. Jerry Buss, you know, the great Jerry Buss, who not only revolutionized the game as a form of entertainment, but from day one bonded, you know, with Magic Johnson, sure, really connected with Kareem in a way that wasn't covered nearly as much. And, you know, supporting all the other guys he brought in the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s. You know, his daughter, Jeannie, learned from him and worked her way up and has really made that same commitment. You see the true love beyond just an employee-employer relationship between her and it was with Kobe, with Magic, with Powell, with now with LeBron and AD. Like, this is something a lot of ownership doesn't do. They just simply see it as, oh, it's a business arrangement. Right. Do your job. Don't worry about it. From the coaching side of things, you know, we've had some coaches that have really looked out for players, you know, personal, you know, troubles and how it translates to the court, and some that maybe they kind of saw it as, well, it's just a job, doesn't matter. You know, I think that's why you got guys like Pat Riley and Phil Jackson that really tried to understand their players beyond just what's on the court to really help them thrive, build trust, and then let that translate to how the team performs on the court. You know, knowing when to, you know, come down a little harder, guys, versus when you look in the back of his eating. And you saw it with Riley, with guys like Magic, even Byron Scott. You know, like, he had a reputation for being given a lot of grief when he first started to earn his way in, and then a lot of praise when he delivered. With Phil, we saw a lot of that happen with, you know, Kobe and Shaq, a lot of the whole Zen mind games thing, but then trying to go above that a little as he was with the team a little longer to say, hey, what's got Kobe down? Okay, his off-court troubles. You know, what's going on with Powell? Does he need to be kind of, you know, hammered a little and saying, don't play so soft, be aggressive? And then, to me, what I thought was really fascinating was with Ron Artest, you know, Meta World Peace. Like, the guy came from a lot of trouble. He had a trouble, you know, off the court issues. You know, he had a lot of mental health things that teams downplayed until he was really in the Lakers. And guys like Phil tried to understand him. And even Lamar Odom with what happened. But unfortunately, after he left, there was less involvement with that. So I see that now with Frank Vogel, really in clips and the way that players talk about him. It's in a way where they have true respect for him. And he was a hire that I remember, like, when we let go of Luke Walton, you know, we were talking about potential replacements. It was Monty Williams and Ty Lue that were kind of leading the pack with that because of the attention on them. And Frank Vogel was a little bit more of a, oh, okay, higher for some people. Mm-hmm. You know, people looked at the defensive impact he made in Indiana and almost forgot about it because it wasn't as recent. And yet he came in, didn't let that grind him down, didn't need any of the attention or you know, limelight and all that. He just committed to his players. Mm-hmm. He's made that bond with his you know, the stars and the role players to, you know, earn your trust, work your way through it, hold you accountable, and also care about what's going on and how can I help. So that speaks a lot to me. And then the last thing is all that translates into the players. You know, having all stars for the sake of being all stars does not always translate to success. It has to be guys that really know how to be leaders. And there's different leadership styles, don't get me wrong, you know, but knowing how to lead means you understand the different personalities and skill sets of, you know, your teammates, you know, coworkers in a lot of business environments. So knowing how to, like, you know, push them a little harder this way, support them a little that way, teach them a little that way. You know, that's what LeBron and I know AD, you've been seeing learning under him, but also LeBron saying that AD has called him out, shows accountability and a willingness to lead in a effective manner. versus other teams where you kind of see some of those stars at times, not every team, but some of them being more pouty, kind of doing the blame game, looking at other guys and saying like, hey, they didn't deliver. Like, that's not a sign of leadership, and that's not going to translate to success most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I think those have been three of the major elements of the Lakers that have helped us translate to success. And even in losing years, just knowing like, hey, we're going to be right back in the hunt soon. See the course, like, you know, make the changes we need to and don't let the noise get to you. They do that really well, despite the fact that we're in a massive market that gets a lot of media scrutiny. And even worse in the age of social media. So to me, that's really impressive, whether you're a Lakers fan or not.
Definitely. Yeah, couldn't agree anymore. Man, time always flies by on these shows, man. I try to keep the thing under 30 minutes, but it's never the case, man. Like, but totally. Yeah. So yeah, I want to touch on a few last things before we close out. You know, we're post bubble now. We're back in stadiums. You know, most stadiums are, you know, like Lakers. You know, there's no fan attendance. Some there's a little bit. I mean, do you think any of that is going to play an effect? Most teams have already been through sort of a bubble experience. But yeah, do you think that's going to, have any sway anything in this upcoming season?
I think there's that psychological element, and players even mentioned it, that is going to be a factor here. You know, when you have the fans there's a lot of emotional impact that happens. You know, you see guys get pumped up when they're winning and the fans are cheering. When the fans boo them when they, you know, go to other arenas, like, some guys wilt under that pressure, others thrive on it. You know, guys like Kobe Bryant, you know, Michael Jordan, they loved that hate because it made them just go out there and prove the haters wrong. Having no fans, it definitely hurts the game from different angles. And I think for players, you know, it hurts. Like, they're out there delivering and they can't hear the cheers. They don't feel that energy around them. In those moments where you're down by two with, you know, 15 seconds to go, you know, the energy that's palpable in a loud and crazy arena is missing. But they've had that experience to some extent with the bubble. I think it's helped them adjust, and it's gone from simply being a, you know, strangely quiet giant arena to being something that's focused on the game. You know, that's all that matters. You say, oh, it's like we're in a quiet practice. Like, the other team is out here to beat us, so we have to tune out the fact that things are different.
Right.
You know, the way that the best really tune out the noise and the pressure when things are normal, when we have those packed arenas, they have to do the same thing with the silence in that way. You know, and ultimately, the best and the successful are the ones that are able to focus on what's on the court, the five guys, the defensive schemes, the offensive motion, and being able to neutralize other players without worrying about, are there fans here or not? Like, they know in the back of their minds, fans are watching at home. Mm-hmm. Fans are watching on the go. They are being affected by what they do on the court, and that's all that matters.
Mm, right. Yeah, I think that's a very good perspective to take on that. I didn't think about it like that. You know, just knowing, like, on the court, you know, everything matters because, you know, people are still watching at home. You know, I didn't really think about that personally, so I like that. I like that take on that. You've probably seen already the annual GM survey last couple of days. There's just a couple of things that I want to get your thoughts on very quickly. I brought up the one of the first thing earlier with 80% voted LA win the chip this year. But there's also another one, 37% went towards the LA for best offseason moves. I don't think there's any anything surprising there. Yeah, if you want to give your thoughts on that real quickly.
Yeah, I mean, Rob is obviously my pick, and I know a lot of people look at it as, well, you're a Lakers homer, and I say, yeah, no doubt, but trying to step away from that as much as possible. What he's had to overcome to get to where, you know, the team is right now is kind of impressive. You know, coming in as, you know, an inexperienced GM in a role where he was originally under Magic Johnson, you know, already people are seeing it as like, oh, you got the job because you were Kobe's agent forever, you know. Mm-hmm. And that ties in a little bit to some of the nepotism that happens with the Lakers. It's the whole family thing. But initially coming in, it turned out to be a bit of a circus, you know, hiring Magic to be our president of basketball ops. And I love Magic Johnson, but I've come to love more for what he did on the court than what he's doing, you know, in the offices of the team. You know, he seemed pretty disinterested with the team. He would have been much better as like a figurehead, really just trying to like pump up free agents and help with, you know, the image of the Lakers rather than running things from a business perspective. And apparently he and Rob didn't get along very well. And especially when you got Magic going on TV, you know, quitting randomly, I think before a game, and then later on saying that there was backstabbing and alluding to Rob, it only made his job a little bit more difficult. So for him to just kind of put his head down, tune out the noise, and then really figure out how to build a relationship with LeBron after a first tumultuous season, tell him these are my plans, these are how we're working on things, and how can we help make you more successful, and then deliver guys like AD, deliver guys like Dwight Howard on small deals that are understated, but you see their impact. You know, deliver, you know, Danny Green, and then quickly realize, hey, this isn't working out. Make sure that KCP is living up to his contract. You know, these are things that a guy like Rob Pelinka will talk in front of cameras, but doesn't need to talk in front of the cameras. His ego isn't so like, you know, big and neat. For him, his pride has seemed to come in the way he handled Kobe and other players in the past. His pride and reputation comes from seeing the guys that he represents and works with being successful. So I think Rob really deserves a lot of recognition for that. I also look at some of the other GMs of other teams, and I've got to give them major props, you know, just to see where they are, you know, where the Toronto Raptors have been, like having lost Kawhi Leonard and still doing as well as they have, you know, give a lot of credit to Masai Ujiri and also Bobby Webster. That's something quite notable to just kind of keep in mind, looking at them and saying, hey, they're not just trying to like tread water. They're still trying to make moves. They have a ways to go, but we'll see where it goes. And then like even, I'd say Danny Ainge in Boston. Like, I hate the Celtics. I hated Ainge when he was on the Celtics. You know, like to see them as part of that same tradition, like it's almost the mirror image of the Lakers. You know, we're kind of like two sides of the same coin, but I see it as like they're part of our like, you know, dark universe rivals or something. You know, he's always pulling something. You know, he's always got something going on. He was willing to trade Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce as they were starting to like decline after that 08 run and the few years following. Even though people at the time were like, are you insane? He took back like Wallace on a ridiculous contract and a bunch of picks. But Brooklyn now totally imploded, and he used those picks to bring in, you know, real talent and really get to a more successful point. He brought in Kyrie in a trade, didn't work, he didn't care, kept moving forward. So I'd never count a guy like that out. You know, Bob Myers of the Warriors. The Warriors flew under the radar because you got KD leaving and then Curry and Klay getting injured and Draymond having a down year. Okay, don't count that guy out. He's definitely going to keep looking around to make sure that they can kind of retweak the roster a bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if they start quietly shopping Draymond Green just in terms of a contract situation and also bringing in talent to keep Steph and Klay going into their 30s a bit. The last guy I kind of keep an eye on at all times is you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder's GM. You know, like I think that Sam Presti has done an incredible job with his track record with building teams, even, you know, taking a couple of swings, a couple of failures, the whole Harden, you know, misstep where he let him go and then kind of turned into the all-star he was. He knows that's on his resume, but seeing him make those trades for, you know, Paul George and then turning that around when Paul wanted out, but making sure he got back a ton of picks shows like he's planning for the future, even when trying to kind of stay in the hunt of it. But there are teams that I look at and I'm just kind of like questioning what they're doing. Like if there's like a best GM survey, I wonder if they also look at the opposite end of it saying like, I don't want to say worst GM, but least effective,
right.
You know, least successful GM. And again, not always on the court, but like what they're doing about it or what they're not. I hate saying it, but you know, our former guy, Mitch Kupchak, Charlotte, you know, I feel for Mitch. I know that once he knew his time was running out here, he had to go elsewhere. And when you play for, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, whether you're a teammate, whether you're now part of his ownership, like his tenure with the Wizards didn't go well. And his moves with the Hornets has been really questionable at best. Like if Kemba Walker was more of a demanding, outspoken guy, he would have been out of Charlotte a long time ago. But he was just a good soldier. But right now you're looking at it, it's like, what are the moves you're making? Like, what is this team's plan? And Mitch has been there for, you know, a few years now. So I don't know where they're going. I hate saying this. Kind of hurts me to even say it. But, you know, Elton Brand, Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I think this is a situation where, see, in the NBA, we've had this trend of, like, putting former players in significant positions without earning their way up simply because of their name pedigree. Mm-hmm. You know, Brand was an all-star. People forget that. It's been a while. You know, what he did with the Clippers, you know, a little bit more on the Sixers after some injuries, like, still, like, he was significant. But suddenly be like, here, be the GM. What have you done to earn that? And the moves they've made have not been too significant. You know, a little bit more recently, trying to really keep Embiid and Simmons in a good place, have pieces around them, but getting Tobias Harris signed onto some ridiculous contract he never lived up to. Okay. Signing Danny Green after he had, you know, a pretty terrible season with us. I mean, we traded him to the Thunder. They let him go, and, like, he ran out to catch him. Oh, okay. You know, being hesitant about what they'd have to make in terms of a trade to get Harden, like, you know, you've got two guys that are kind of unhappy together, and you're not exactly eager to move ahead too aggressively. Like, that worries me. Okay. You know, there's a number of other guys, but I don't want to just kind of keep going on and on and on. But, you know, there's definitely more GMs that aren't being as successful with the moves than the handful that I mentioned earlier that I think are. And so going back to it, I think Rob has really done an impressive job, especially when, you know, the NBA, you know, long timers have maybe looked at this new upstart and been like, oh, this former agent coming in telling us what to do. Well, look how he's delivered. So, you know, maybe they want to make a few more steps to bring in guys like Rob if they want to stay in the hunt.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, Rob, he just came in, you know, people against him. And I was a little conflicted. I mean, I didn't really know who he was. You know, I heard about, you know, being an agent, Kobe and all that. I knew he had, you know, experience a little bit, but coming into a management role. Yeah, man, my man came in, he dropped jaws, man. I mean, he did what he needed to do. And it's just, he's an ongoing job. And I can't be thankful enough to have him a part of our organization, you know. But definitely a lot of valid points there. So lastly, before we officially wrap things up, I want to get to a hypothetical here. I don't really like using these, but I mean, it just crossed my mind as I was prepping this episode yesterday. Obviously yesterday we learned about, I don't know if you saw the Paul George AD situation, almost happened in Indiana, all of that. Obviously didn't happen. Things fell through, but say, you know, it happened, right? Say AD and Paul George teamed up. And there was no AD to the Lakers. Do you think we'd be in the same situation we'd be in now? Do you think we would have pursued another free agent? Obviously we got AD from a trade, but later on, would you think we'd get another star to come in and help LeBron? Or do you think, you know, we wouldn't have our 17th ring by now? What are your thoughts on that?
Boy, yeah, those hypotheticals are definitely tricky. And the further back you go with a hypothetical, the harder it gets because of the ripple effects.
Right.
You know, the whole question of, like, what if Kobe and Shaq stayed together? You know, how many would they have won? Also should extend to what moves would other teams have made. Sure. So with the Paul George AD thing, I know PG originally alluded to one of the top power forwards of the best in the league and then eventually confirmed it was Anthony Davis. If they paired up, it obviously would have been quite a competitive, you know, Eastern Conference, you know, where they were a few years back, you know, before he left for the Thunder. Mm-hmm. How they would have grown together would have been more of the question for me. And mm-hmm. in terms of how that would have impacted the Lakers, you know, it's tough to say because the first question is, would LeBron have come here? Would he have looked down the road and said, I think we can get this guy that I've mentored and all that? I think at that point, AD would have been locked into some contract, so maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. Would we have chased another star? Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're not content to just kind of sit there and say, hey, we got a guy who's heading towards the twilight of his career, one of the greatest of all times, and we're going to have him play with a bunch of young pups. Like, no way. There's no way he would have signed here, LA or not, if he didn't look ahead and say, what's your plan for keeping us in the hunt?
Right.
So who else would we have brought in? I don't know. It really kind of depends on how the East would have responded to that team, how the playoffs had shaped up a few years following that. But I wouldn't have been surprised if our Kawhi pitch would have been a little more aggressive because, you know, Kawhi really made something work out.
Yeah.
with Paul George on the Clippers. So would that have been a better opportunity for him to shine here? Yeah, possibly, you know, a few years back. Could we have tried to go after other guys before they signed like mega deals like, you know, Damian Lillard? Yeah, again, possibly. Would we have swung anything with, you know, some of the other teams that had kind of burgeoning unhappy stars? I believe we would have. I don't think they would have just sat there and said, oh, we didn't get AD. That's all we, like, okay, we're done.
Right.
A team like LA doesn't wilt under that and they just go ahead and make like kind of a panic move. You know, they at least they haven't really recently. So I would have been shocked if our response to that was to just kind of be complacent and let LeBron ride out to the sunset without really being in the playoff hunt anymore. And I'm glad it didn't really shape up that way. You know, there's been moments in our history where the what if situation is an incredibly painful one. Like, oh man, if they could have worked it out. Oh man, if Magic didn't get HIV and he had a chance to come back. Or, oh man, what if that Charles Barkley to the Lakers for James Worthy trade was finalized and wasn't nixed at the last second. But I like to think of it as what's meant to be is meant to be. And thankfully that led to a 17th championship and hopefully an 18th soon enough.
True. Yeah. Like I said, I hate doing that. I didn't want to throw that out there, but you know, so yeah. Hey man, Shaheen, man, it's been a pleasure, my guy. We're just out of time here. I mean, any last words, you want to tell my audience or anything like that?
Hey, just what I always tell people, you know, go Lakers. That's all it comes down to, man. Thank you so much for having me on today, Ralph.
For sure, man. Yeah. Where can the people find you if they want to follow?
I am on Instagram, at Shaheen Orion. I'm also on Twitter, but not nearly as active. But yeah, Instagram is usually the best way to catch a hold of me. So hit me up there, follow me, check out my cool content, some original designs, a lot of resharing and recognizing the fans. And if you definitely want to debate some basketball directly, just hit me up through Twitter and let's get into it.
For sure. All right. Yeah, for sure, man. All right. It's been a pleasure again. And we'll talk again in the future, man. I'm excited to see how everything turns out, man, this season. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Same here, man. All right. Take it easy.
All right. You too. All right.